What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning into the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have a very special show for you today. On the phone with me, I have an industry veteran who has created a foundation for many up-and-coming and seasoned drummers and has recorded with some of the biggest artists and bands in the music industry, such as Herbie Hancock, George Duke, and many others. Please put your hands together and welcome Grammy-nominated drummer and music producer, Terry Lynn Carrington. How's it going, Terry?
Oh, pretty good. I can't complain.
Oh.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Doing great. You know, just before we get into interview questions, I just want to let you know how much of a fan I am of your music and your works that you've done over the years. And I can date back, Terry, all the way back to the Arsenio Hall days. This is really where I discovered your talents as a drummer. So big hats off to you.
thank you very much. Those were the good old days.
Well, you know, for me, it was really a good old days for me. I was really young at the time. I was about 13 or 14 years old. But that's in the era where I started actually recording and tracking and, you know, really getting into my own composition as a keyboardist and music producer. So those were those golden years for me. So, and, you know, it was just kind of all the great musicians and the music that was out there. It was just really an huge inspiration as a musician. So, and you were definitely one of the people in the movement. So thank you.
Oh, thank you.
You know, you got a new CD that's coming out July 19th, the Mosaic Project, Terry. And, you know, a host of all the things that you've done, you know, this is more, in my ear, more of a traditional side of jazz, you know, compared to some of the other things that you've done. You know, how was the CD constructed versus some of the other records that you've done in the past?
Well, it's been about half and half. I had a couple of releases in Europe that were more acoustic jazz. And I've just pretty much always straddled the fence with your more acoustic jazz and your more electric jazz, more funky stuff and more straight-ahead stuff. And I just was raised with both of those, and it's hard for me to pick one direction, so I just try to focus each project with a particular sound. Like this particular project is all acoustic instruments there's an electric guitar and a little bit of Fender Rhodes, but for the most part, it's acoustic instruments and it has a jazz sound, which, you know, I've produced it that way on purpose so that, you know, the sound would have a focus. And my previous CD, More to Say, was a lot more like my first CD, Real Life Story, that came out, which was mostly electric instruments. And that had a totally different focus. It was, I guess, more smooth jazz, though I don't really like that term. I call it groove jazz. And it took a long time to make that record, whereas this one probably was done in 6 weeks or so, you know, top to bottom, 6 to 8 weeks.
Wow. You know, well, I must say, as far as the musicianship that's on the CD, man, it's a lot of virtuosity going on in there with all the bandmates. I mean, it was just blows my mind when I listen to it, you know, even from the song Transformation, Michelle, and then take another twist down to Soul Talk. I mean, it's just such a variety of moods on the CD. I mean, it's just excellent work.
Well, thank you. I mean, I wrote all of those arrangements with the singers in mind, and they all have different personalities. So a song like Transformation, I mean, I grew up listening to the original Nona Hendrix recording, and, you know, to try to put a jazz rendition around it, it was challenging, but it was something that I really wanted to try to do because I really love that song and thought it would be a cool thing to do. Same thing with Michelle by Lennon McCartney. And the same thing with Simply Beautiful by Al Green that Cassandra Wilson sings.
Wow. You know, starting out as a drummer, Terry, you know, you work with a lot of heavy hitters, and I got to, you know, pick your brain and get some experience and some stories. And how was working with Mr. Herbie Hancock?
Well, he's a big idol of mine, so working with him was a dream come true, basically. I remember when I was a kid listening to his records, and he had this one live record, and it was Tony Williams and Ron Carter and Wayne Shorter and Freddie Hubbard. And before he introduced all of them, he said, "The greatest, Wayne Shorter, the greatest, Freddie Hubbard," and he went on down the list. And I just remember listening to that, thinking, wow, one day I really want to play with him. And when that happens, I'll feel like I've made it.
So. No, I think we are, man. Herbie's just a phenomenal musician. And, you know, being a keyboardist myself, I mean, you can't help but to gravitate to a style and, you know, try your best to get some sort of dynamics from him. I mean, he's just performing at such an optimal level of musicianship, man. So, yeah, I can't say enough about him.
Yeah, I actually think he's probably the most influential keyboard player, you know, that there's been, because his style crossed so many genres and he influenced, you know, most every modern jazz player, as well as so many contemporary funk players as well. So,
well, he's something. Well, aside from Herbie Hancock being a lot of your music influences in your career, I mean, who were some of the influences that really kind of paved the way as a drummer percussionist and into the production world of recording?
Well, you know, as far as drummers, I loved all the great masters. Roy Haynes was a particular favorite, and he's still playing, and he still sounds great. Saw him not too long ago. Then Jack DeJohnette became a big mentor of mine and friend, and he really helped shape my thoughts on music in general. And then after that, I met Jack and hung out with him a lot during my late teens. And then I moved to New York when I was 18 and started playing eventually with Wayne Shorter. And he became a really big influence on me as well, especially the writing part. And also a spiritual mentor and just a music mentor. And I really started thinking about writing more long form compositions opposed to your more typical jazz short form compositions. Sure. And as far as producing, I think I've just always liked to do that. From what I can remember, I was always trying to find a way to make the songs that I was writing come to life. And I would go to the local studios and, you know, get some people together and play these songs I was writing. And somebody like Quincy Jones is a, you know, influence on that end of things, because he was also a jazz musician and started out with jazz as his roots and grew into all the other forms of music that he got involved with. You know, so, I mean, that's kind of how I see myself, as somebody that, you know, is foundation is a jazz musician, but does everything. I mean, hip hop is a big part of my musical upbringing, you know.
No, I definitely agree with you. You know, funk has been my foundation as a keyboardist, and what I like to do is incorporate a lot of different styles and genres into my funk, along with jazz and hip hop and R&B and rock, and you know, just all the different styles that I gravitate to, aside from, you know, being strictly a funk keyboardist. You know, there's just so many different styles out there, and really add your own seasonings and kind of make up your own palette of musicianship, right, and things. So, you know, that's really where it's at. You know, but if you really had to define yourself as a drummer, Terry, I think a lot of drummers focus on the pocket side, and other drummers focus on, you know, speed and dexterity and mm-hmm. you know, just a whole bunch of other tricks. I mean, what's really the key points and foundation as a drummer for you?
Well, that's a hard question, because I really love, you know, being creative and trying to paint pictures on the instrument to the best of my ability. I love the tradition of jazz, where the drummer has a voice that really helps shape the direction of the song. I also love groove music and just laying a pocket down. I'm not really an exhibition drummer. I don't really, you know, have a lot of trickery and those kinds of things, but I hope to draw people into my playing just by my connection with the instrument and my connection with the music in general and the musicians I'm playing with, and my desire to be connected to the listener. And I think there's something to be said for that. It's not really, to me, always about impressing people with your dexterity and technique, though it's important to have good technique and enough of it that you can get your point across.
Definitely. You know, speaking of song structure and arrangement, Terry, you know, there's so many different ways to, you know, bring a song together and bring it to the end. You know, what are some of the steps and building a foundation, you know, from start to finish, you know, because I think really the beginning part of the song is really where the strength can start, you know what I mean? And towards the end, we kind of see the big picture, you know, we can start from the end. But, you know, what are some of the steps and processes that you've, along the years, put songs together in your own style?
Well, like you just said, the beginning of the song is very important. I do like intros that may be a little mysterious, but I think at some point, you know, you kind of have to get to the point and let people know the overall shape and feeling of the song, even if it might change. And I think your intention has to be somewhat clear from the beginning. There's so many different ways to write a song, and it also depends on the genre that you're writing in. I think for me, I try to capture a mood and a spirit and a piece, and it has to have dimension. I don't particularly care for music that feels too monotonous. I do like the tribal nature of music, where you can play the same rhythm over and over. I'll play songs and not take a drum fill, and I don't have a problem with that, because I'm committed to the groove and the mood of the piece. But then if that's the case, then it has to have dimension even in other areas. And I don't write music from the drum patterns or the drum rhythms of the songs. I hear melody and harmony first, and sometimes lyrics. So if that's the case, I'm always trying to shape the melodies and pay attention to the lyric and the content of the song, because we're accompanying the melody of the singer or the horn player.
You know, I totally agree with you, Terry. You know, one of the production steps I use pretty much in all of my compositions is really building my compositions and chord arrangements and drums around pre-existing vocals that I might record a couple of days before when the artist came in. You know, they have a basic skeleton and foundation of the track of where it could go melodically, the changes, you know, but usually after the artists leave, I usually strip all the music down, including the drums, and I start building my tracks around the vocals and harmonies, because again, you mentioned earlier that, man, it's really about the artists making them stand out, and we're just complementing the harmonies in the background. So yeah, I totally agree with you on that.
Yeah. And I mean, the drummer also helps really shape the direction of the song, especially in more creative forms where the drummer controls the dynamics and can control the density, you know, of a piece, depending on how busy the drummer plays or not. And you have to really know how to give a song some breath and air and room to go someplace. And a lot of times, especially with younger musicians, I find that I'm looking for that, you know, I'm looking to hear a little more breath and air and suppleness, if that's a good word.
Right. No, it's totally, it's like, man, sometimes less is better, but you still have to have it where it's full enough with it being less. You know, I think a lot of it's just the ear maturity. You know what I mean? It's just, you grow into it. For me, at least, you know, I listened to a lot of hip hop and R&B growing up with my peers around me, but you know, I really developed a taste for jazz as I got older, as my ear started to mature and my ability as a keyboard player and a piano player changed, and my production started getting bigger, you know, just with the development of the ear maturity. So, yeah, it's just really a mature thing, I think, you know, totally, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, you can also have a full sound, obviously, without it being too busy, and I think that's sometimes what people forget. Sometimes it's actually more full and fatter sounding with less density, you know, with less going on. And I think that's one thing that great producers have a knack for.
Right, definitely. You know, finding your zone as a performer and a music producer, Terry, do you feel it's in the studio where you can really focus on your compositions with your bandmates, or is it on stage, on tours, and, you know, pulling from the audience's energy and the improv that you guys get to do on stage together?
Well, the focus on the actual songs I do before I get to the studio, I demo all my songs and really pay attention to every note, and I generally write out everything, bass lines, voicings, and then let the musicians take that as a starting point and add their own flavor and personality to it. So I try to compose as much of a piece as possible. On this new record, a lot of it was written out, And as a producer, you have to really know when you have to stop being married to what you wrote and allow somebody else to put their flavor on it. Then when I play the songs live, whether it be in the studio or even live performances, I then focus on performing the songs, which is a totally different focus than writing the song or being, even producing the song. It's all, they're all different focuses. So it's sometimes hard to do all of it, you know, wear all the hats at the same time. But then with anything else, when you go out live, the song tends to take its own shape and grow in a different way than it did in the studio when you recorded it. So that's the beauty about jazz.
Now, do you ever get a chance to maybe restructure, maybe remix an existing composition strictly for stage? I mean, this is something we probably wouldn't do on their studio, but for the stage environment, it's probably a great arrangement. I mean, do you find yourself changing a few things on the songs, or do you just kind of keep it consistent the way the CD goes?
Oh, no, I definitely change things because it depends on who's playing. A lot of times, not the same people playing. So I change based on either who's playing or based on instrumentation or based on sometimes even based on just not wanting to be bored, you know, with something and finding a way to end the song differently, or even sometimes a room may sound different. I might make some changes on the spot as far as dynamics go. There's a lot of little things, subtle things that change in the piece, and mostly because jazz musicians are improvising so much, so every night the song is going to be different.
Oh, totally. And that's where it's at. You know, I talk to a lot of guys I interview, man, and, you know, it's like trying to capture those moments we get on stage and trying to replicate that in the studio is going to be really hard sometimes, man. You know, it's like, man, if you weren't there, man, you missed out. So,
yeah, well, I think also we tend to play more busy live than we do in the studio. And I think that makes sense. I think in the studio, it's important to play a little less because it's under a microscope.
Right. So format, everything's structured out for radio.
Well, you just hear every little detail also.
Yeah,
a
true.
Lot more.
Yeah,
so when you have too much information, I think you can fill a room differently than you can fill, you know, something digitally.
Yeah, oh no, I totally hear everything different in a live form than I do in a studio. In a studio, I'm really looking and trying to strive for the best sonic mix possible. Everything has placements, and yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, but when you get on stage, man, it's just having that feeling of that music running through your body, man, just really changes you as a musician. Extra dynamics come out of your playing, and yeah, it just really changes. So,
yeah, for sure. Two different mediums.
So, Terry, what is on the musical agenda for 2011?
Well, right now I'm just finishing up this tour, Sing the Truth. I'm musical director for this, and it features Diane Reeves, Angelique Kidjo, and Liz Wright. The band is five-piece band, percussion, Manyonga Jackson, James Genus on bass, and Jerry Allen on piano and keyboards, and Romero LaBamba on guitar. And it's a lot of fun. It's a roots music. It's a lot of gospel and folk and R&B and some jazz in there as well. And I had a lot of fun doing the arrangements for this project. I'm also gearing up for the Beantown Jazz Festival, which is in September. I'm artistic director for that festival. I teach full-time at Berklee College of Music. And I just have a lot of different things coming up, one-offs with this person or that person. Playing some of Esperanza Spalding. I'm on her new CD and her last CD, so I have a lot of live gigs with her as well.
Wow. Man, busy schedule.
Yeah.
Well, Terry, it's been a true honor and pleasure talking with you on my show. Thank you so much for taking your time and, you know, chopping it up with me one-on-one. I would love to have you back,
pleasure.
Man.
Thank you. Anytime.
Well, great. Well, you have a safe 2011 and best luck to you. And I expect to hear more great music from you in the future.
Thank you so much, Spud. Take care.
You have a great one. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. And a big shout out and thank you to Terry Lynn Carrington for coming on my show and chopping it up with me. It was a great opportunity for me to talk to Terry. She's an excellent musician. The work that she's done in the past and her current work that she's doing now. And on top of all that, she's teaching at Berklee College of Music, and it doesn't get better than that. For more information on Terry Lynn Carrington, you need to check out our website at www.terrylynncarrington.com. www.terrylynncarrington.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up at www.spud2tight.com. www.spud2tight.com. And to close out the show, I'm going to play a track from Terry's latest CD. And the title of the track is called Crayola, and it is off the Mosaic Project. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening in. And until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.
Invested some time on you, but your manner makes me feel so rude.